from HanselMinutes.com. It's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman, hosted by Carl Franklin. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 112, recorded live Tuesday, April 22nd, 2008. Support for Hansel Minutes is provided by Telerik RAD Controls, the most comprehensive suite of components for Windows Forms and ASP.NET web applications. Online at www.telerik.com. Support is also provided by .NET Developers Journal, the world's leading .NET developer magazine. Online at www.sys-con.com. In this episode, Scott discusses the past, present, and future of .NET unit testing frameworks with developers Charlie Poole, Jeff Brown, Brad Wilson, and Roy Osherov.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman, and this is another episode of Hansel Minutes, and I'm sitting here at the Alt.NET conference in Redmond, Washington, with a panel of unit testing experts. We've got Charlie Poole, maintainer of NUnit. We've got Roy Osherov, a developer at TypeMock and the author of the upcoming Art of Unit Testing book. We've got Jeff Brown, the lead on MBUnit. And we've got Brad Wilson, the co-creator of XUnit.net. This is the first time I've had this many people on the show, and I appreciate your guys' patience as we have our very first panel on Hansel Minutes, but I figured when I get this many people who know about unit testing all in one place at one time, I had to sit down and talk to you guys. Now, I've been an NUnit guy from way back, and I used NUnit at my last job, and that was always the canonical example. And sometimes people say that's the first example of the beginning of moving a lot of things over from Java, moving things from Java in the sense that JUnit in some respects, begat NUnit. Would you agree with that, Charlie?
Well, it's the first example in the .NET world. Perhaps not the first, but the first very well-known one. Of course, a lot of things got moved from Java to many different languages. Mm-hmm. And I should say, you know, we're very glad to have you as a user.
Thank you. But there's a lot of options now, and we've got these options assembled in this room, and that's one of the things we want to talk about. But is that a good thing to bring things over from Java? Are we being derivative, and is being derivative bad?
I think it's really not that important where they came from. We're all developing software. We're using different technologies. We can learn a lot from each other. Mm-hmm. Even after the stuff has been brought over, we're continuing to pick up new ideas from the Java community, from the Ruby community, from Python folks. And it all applies once we translate it to our own environment.
Mm-hmm. So there's no unit testing blood feud that's going on?
I think not.
Yeah. Now, MBUnit is known for its row test attribute. And row test was considered to be particularly innovative, and a lot of people got excited about MBUnit when they saw that. So what is row test, and why should I care?
So row test is a very simple way to run a parameterized unit test with a bunch of different values. So basically, let's suppose you have a simple algorithm which manipulates strings. And with certain kinds of strings, it'll produce a result. And with certain other kinds of strings, like maybe an empty one, will produce a different result. But the structure of the test itself is all pretty much the same. So you can very easily parameterize your test and reduce the amount of code that you have to write, essentially. But there's a whole lot more you can do beyond that.
Mm-hmm. But the idea that you would slap an attribute on a test and suddenly that test became a test of many, many things seems like it's a deceptively simple thing, but it was very, very powerful, and it got a lot of people excited about that.
Oh, yeah. It's actually one of our most popular features, and it's been duplicated in a lot of different testing frameworks, mm-hmm. which is good to see, actually.
And I understand that you can pull that not just from data that you can stack in attributes, but you can pull it from a database even. You can have database-driven tests, more mm-hmm. integration-style tests.
Row tests are just one special case where the data is embedded inside of the source code. But mm-hmm. we can be pulling data from files. We can pull it from a database. We can pull it. Recently, a lot of people are liking that we can pull from CSV files.
Hmm. Interesting. Little portable databases. Now, Brad, when XUnit.net came out, my first impression was, do we need another one? But a lot of pragmatists are saying, well, of course, we can continue to have as many as it'll take, and people will use the one that makes them happy. Why did you feel the need to write yet another unit testing framework?
So just to be clear, when Jim Newkirk, was on, one of the guys who did NUnit 2.0 and worked with Charlie, mm-hmm. Jim and I we're looking to sort of take our experience writing unit tests with mostly with NUnit, some with MS Test instead of Visual Studio. And
which is not represented here, interestingly.
Which, yeah,
I guess
exactly.
I'll play that guy.
We were looking to sort of take some of our experience and turn it into a unit testing framework that was sort of opinionated in the sense that we wanted to give people guidance on the things that we felt were good for unit testing. So we made a lot of changes that made people a little uncomfortable. We renamed attributes. We took a lot of attributes away. We sort of scaled down the core to something really small in order to sort of represent the core of what we felt was important for TDD-style unit testers.
You know, that's a really interesting, the way that you phrase that in saying that you have a very opinionated, and I would even go so far as to say unapologetically opinionated unit testing framework.
Well, yeah, you know me, so unapologetically opinionated is me.
And rather than... I look sometimes in the older versions of NUnit juxtaposed with the newer versions of MBUnit, and I thought that it was kind of evolutionary. While XUnit.net has removed a great deal of things, you've basically given people less rope with which to hang themselves.
That was, Jim and I have spent a lot of time talking at conferences about, you know, the things that do work and the things that can get you in trouble. And so we felt like giving people that guidance by taking those functionality out of the testing framework was very important.
So one of the ones that you removed virtually completely was the setup and teardown, where people were putting a great deal of code in their setups and to prepare for the test. And that test, that code ultimately doesn't get tested, of course.
Right. There was actually two driving factors. One is Jim and I both believe that setup and teardown are an often overused thing, and it can make tests very difficult to understand. But there was another sort of driving factor as well, which was setup and teardown as attributes on methods had strange behavior associated with it that wasn't really consistent with the .NET framework. And so we decided that the thing that sort of best described setup and teardown to us was a constructor and dispose. And so we removed setup and teardown in favor of constructor and dispose to sort of say, let's make better use of the framework we've already got and the rules we already understand.
Hmm, interesting. Now, what are some of the features that you guys are working on NUnit that are kind of innovative for the next versions?
Well, I do have to interject.
Oh, please.
Something
take it where
here.
You want to take it, Charlie.
I think it's quite interesting that XUnit these days is the opinionated framework, because NUnit used to be the framework we used to say with attitude.
Yeah, unit testing with attitude,
and that we would refuse to add features that we didn't think people should be using. And it's probably no coincidence that Jim Newkirk mm-hmm. is involved in both projects. As NUnit has moved along, some of us have gotten convinced that we can't keep refusing features to people because we think they're not good for them. We used to feel like some of the other frameworks, perhaps MBUnit would be an example, were over-featured and were giving people too many different choices to make. And our users would complain about that, mm-hmm. and we would say, well, no, we think this is the way TDD unit testing should be done. Now we're moving, I think, towards sort of a new balance, maybe somewhere with still some opinions about what's right and what should be in and what should be out, but a little more towards giving people more things. So we're now putting in the data-driven features like test case, which works similar to a row test. And the reason that wasn't in before is that people used to believe that you couldn't do test-driven development with those data-driven sort of cases. And now it looks like you probably can, now that we understand a little better how test-driven development works.
Now, Roy, you, as an Agile practitioner, do you have some opinions, I'm sure, about this? Is the kitchen sink approach better? Is the more lightweight approach better?
Well, when XUnit first came out, I was really skeptical about using it. I thought, probably the same as you. Why do we need another one? And I didn't like the fact that it was not backwards compatible, so it was almost impossible or virtually impossible to move to it if you have a lot of existing tests with one of the other frameworks, mm-hmm. especially if you had setup and teardown. It was hard to maintain that kind of code and move it over.
Mm-hmm.
But I think as time passed, I'm more comfortable with doing stuff with XUnit for greenfield code. I mean, I have no problem with that. I think it's actually a very good thing for people who try to do minimalist thing that they believe in. The fact that there are three frameworks or three
at
big
least.
Frameworks. Yeah. Big frameworks to choose from is good because it creates sort of a virtual competition, not in terms of features, but in terms of approaching the community in different ways. So NUnit approaches the community differently than MBUnit in terms of features or extensibility or API. And XUnit approaches the community very differently by minimalism and by being very, very opinionated. And especially having starting to work at TypeMock, which is a very opinionated framework by itself, mm-hmm. a lot of people would say, I'm starting to appreciate that kind of worldview.
You look like you had a comment.
Oh, sure. So what I find is great right now is that we are seeing a lot of different innovation appearing in the unit testing space again. And, you know, part of this actually, I think, is somewhat being catalyzed by the XUnit.net stuff coming out. And we're just looking at all sorts of different ways that we can meet the needs of the community. So, you know, traditionally, MBUnit, for example, is taking this approach where we want to meet as diverse a set of needs as possible. And that has meant there's been a certain explosion in the number of features provided. But now with version 3 coming out, we are actually consolidating the feature set to a great extent. We're retaining a very wide scope in that we want to be able to do unit testing, but also integration testing. But each of these features now is more primitive and more composable. And we're trying to find ways to reduce the cognitive weight of the framework while still allowing people a lot of flexibility.
Hmm. I've got a question about reuse, and I'm just going to take a brief moment here to thank our sponsors, and we'll be right back. Hi, it's Scott here from Another Place in Time. I hope you're enjoying the show so far. I apologize for interrupting it, but I wanted to let you know that assembling a podcast like this every week isn't free. Certainly the bandwidth bill crushes us every month, so I want to let you know that this show is sponsored by Telerik. They make the show possible, and they make some pretty cool products as well. For example, if you're trying to build a Web 2.0 Ajaxy application, trying to use the Web 1.0 components, it's kind of difficult. You got to get the next-gen stuff if you want to build the next-gen websites, and that's exactly what the folks at Telerik have got in their new upcoming product, which is codenamed Rad Controls Prometheus. It's a big pack of web controls built entirely on top of the Microsoft ASP.NET Ajax stuff that you already understand. It's going to give you a lot of performance and interactivity on your next project. They mirror the ASP.NET Ajax API, so the development's really straightforward. Client scripts are shared, loading time is pretty fast. You set a couple of properties, you can even bind to web services for a really efficient operation. The new RAD editor for ASP.NET Ajax loads up to 4 times faster than before, and the RAD grid will do thousands of records in milliseconds. But of course, it's better to try these things for yourself, so you can visit telerik.com/ASP.NET Ajax and download a trial. Thanks a lot for listening, and we'll get right back to the show. So one of the things that I found in writing unit tests in each of these frameworks that we're talking about here today, as well as MS tests, is I find that things get considerably more and more complicated. And I find that, of course, that my test becomes a program in and of itself. And I want to start writing classes and utilities and things. And I'm seeing in all three frameworks that there are, is more focus on extensibility, on ways to say, I want the framework to work like this. What are some of the mechanisms for extensibility in each of your frameworks?
So we felt it was very important for us to be able to have extensibility even in our extension points. In fact, we even went to the point of designing the framework. The minimalism went all the way down to, you know, as many things as we could push out into extensions, we did, because we wanted to ensure that our extensibility model was effective by, you know, 90% of what you get is an extension.
How much can I hurt myself? If you have a unit testing framework that's that extensible, it sounds like it really, really hurt myself.
You could hurt yourself, but you could also do yourself great good. So there's always the potential with any tool that you can shoot yourself in the foot. You know, just don't drop the hammer. That said, there are certain conventions, perhaps, that you should choose to adhere to, and in order to avoid shooting yourself in the foot.
what I'm trying to think about is that something like road testing seems like a reasonable extension that everyone should support, and being able to pull information from an external database, whether it be Excel or an actual database or CSV. But what else could I possibly want to add to a what other semantics would I possibly want to add to a unit testing framework?
All sorts of stuff. So MBUnit takes a very strong approach towards extensibility, wherein you can refine and vary the semantics of tests themselves. So the test framework gives you all of these built-in tests, but you can add new stuff to them. For example, one thing people have wanted to be able to do is to use a rollback attribute to apply to the entire test fixture, and that's something that we are capable of. Another thing people have wanted, and that appears in XUnit also, is rich support for metadata. So we want to be able to annotate a test with information that is used for managing it. What category does it belong to? Who wrote it? You know, is it important? And other such things. We actually go a step further, and we capture the XML documentation associated with the method. We capture the source code location associated with the tests. And a bunch of other things as well.
Now, Charlie, you had said before that there were a number of features that were being requested by your community, and you're starting to think that maybe being the minimalist test framework isn't where it's at. What kind of things are they asking for and that you may have previously turned down?
Well, a classic example is the ability to run one's tests in a particular order.
That's bitten me a number of times.
Yeah, for test people who are into test-driven development, that raises the specter that you're trying to run the tests in a certain order because you're going to create dependencies among your tests. And if you're a test-driven unit tester, you don't want to see that happen. However, people do manage to come up with use cases where it's reasonable to run some tests in a certain order, and it's hard to turn them down on that basis. So what we came up with for NUnit in the 2.4 series was the notion that the core bits that allow you to write typical test-driven development tests would be in NUnit, and those kinds of things like ordering tests would be in extensions. And we created an extensibility model. Now, our extensibility model is a little different from MBUnit because it's aimed at people who are actually writing extensions to be distributed to others. It's not really aimed at the testers, the programmers, the users themselves writing the extensions. So it's a little more general and more complicated to use, harder to use, I would say. And so we had the hope of many people volunteering to write extensions for these features. It's been very slow taking off people who might write an extension for NUnit to do something have typically turned around and written a framework instead and just written their own test framework. Developers are kind of perverse that way.
Yeah, that is definitely is very challenging. I know that I've written a number of things to extend both NUnit and NAT at my previous job, but they're just still there. They became internal. For some reason, that last mile, that moment where I'm leaning at the tape at the finish line to go and put it out into the world, something prevented me from doing that.
And there are a lot of them like that out there that are just waiting around in people's companies for other people to use. So we have set up a place where we can showcase them. And I'm going to try to take it a bit further and start doing some examples myself and other people on the NUnit team, writing them to show what can be done and to see if that stirs up the interest a little more.
Mm-hmm. Roy?
Yeah, I just wanted to add that one of the things that we talked about here in the conference, we had a couple of sessions about where those, at least two of the three tools here are going. What's the future of NUnit? Where is MBUnit going with Galio? And we didn't even talk about Galio. And what I want to raise here
Galio
is...
Galio being a code name for a new feature or a new product within the MBUnit family? We'll have to talk about that.
I'll explain it in a sentence, and then Jeff will explain it. It's a platform for test automation where MBUnit is just a framework with which you write the tests.
Okay.
So Galio will run basically NUnit tests as well as MBUnit and so on.
Okay.
But before that, one of the things that I wanted to focus on is not what small improvements we've made so far, but where should we be looking at to the future. What are the problems developers who are using these frameworks trying to solve or trying to test? Some of these, we have no solution so far, such as parallelism. How do you write tests that are running
testing
in parallel?
Testing concurrency.
How do you test for deadlocks, for example?
And is there a difference between a unit testing framework and an integration testing framework?
And how would you want to write integration tests with the unit test framework? Or do you want to have a different framework for it?
Certainly there's a need, because I have shoehorned a number of integration tests into various unit testing frameworks and struggled along the way.
And we've all done this. And the big question is, should we continue to do this? Are we being stuck somewhere? We don't even know it. Is there another dimension that we are supposed to be going to? And that we're stuck on right now, and like maybe a year from now, we'll realize, wow, we were like 2 years in the past, when all along we should have done this little thing, and everything would have changed.
Certainly, we're going to have the benefit of hindsight in a year, but it sounds like you guys have a plan for the future with this project Galio.
Well, let's talk about Galio for a moment. So Galio is a neutral platform for automation tests. And what that means is we provide test runners, we provide integration with the IDE, we provide integration with the build tools, and so on. And really what it's intended to be is this sort of layer on top of which you can sit any framework you like. Currently we support MBUnit version 3 and version 2, of course. We also support NUnit, XUnit.net. We've got MS Test on there as well, and there will be others.
Presumably you support the various mocking frameworks like TypeMock, represented here today, of course.
Yeah, we support TypeMock. We have integration with NCover and PEX and ReSharper and all sorts of great tools.
The whole toolkit.
The whole toolkit. It's a gigantic tool chain. And really the reason for that is that we want to promote innovation in two different spaces, especially. So one is we want to promote innovation in the test frameworks. Roy asks a great question. Should we be using a unit test framework to do integration testing? The reason traditionally that we use a unit testing framework to do integration testing is because the unit testing framework has all the good tools, right? We have access to all of these affordances and integration points with our IDE and with our build tool chain and so on, that it just makes sense to try to use that to do integration testing. Well, maybe we can do better. So the idea is that someone can choose to try to do something better and build an integration testing framework purpose-built with natural constraints in the system for integration testing purposes on top of Galio. And we provide all sorts of features in the platform to help make that possible.
Now, am I to understand, kind of paraphrasing, that you are lowering the bar for the entry of new frameworks that have yet to be thought of, such that if I want to make Hansel Tests 2000, I don't have to do test runners and Visual Studio integration and all these other things that would formerly be administrivia, really, to my innovation, that are preventing me from getting jumpstarted about my new idea?
That's absolutely the case. And there's a surprising amount of effort involved in this infrastructure, actually, when you start thinking about how many tools you have to integrate with. But we're also lowering the bar for people who want to innovate in the test runner space as well. You know, the GUI that we provide is great. It's improving. And, you know, we have integration with ReSharper and other things. But I'm sure someone out there has some really fantastic ideas for tools and affordances that they would love to provide that would work across a wide variety of different frameworks. So instead of, you know, having to roll their own complete tool chain, they can build on top of ours, provide some new kind of runner as well.
Yeah. A couple of years ago at my last company, I used Adaptive's Zanebug, which was an Uber test runner, but he had to go and figure out how to test run all of these different available frameworks. It sounds like he would be able to build that on top of Galio, and he would get free unit test running for all.
Exactly. And we want to encourage this. We've got a few projects that we're looking to start actually in this space. One of which being tentatively named Archimedes, which would build on top of the Galio platform to provide a test case management solution for automation tests. So basically a place where all of your test results are kept and can then be subjected to analysis and review.
What are some of the extreme examples of really cool things that you've seen in the testing space? One of the things that I was particularly proud of at my last company was that the guys decided that rather than DLLs in a bin folder popping out at the other end of a continuous integration build, that the result of a build, a daily build, would be a virtual machine. And we wrote automation stuff to create machines, bring them up totally bare bones, X-copy our product and deploy it into the system, and then run integration tests on a live running machine, shut it down, freeze dry it like a bug in Amber, and have it prepared every single day for the sales guy to pick up that day's virtual machine. And we were patting ourselves on the back about that for quite a number of months. And still, I think that's pretty innovative.
Yeah, you know, this is a tool that we're actually looking to build internally at my employer, Ingenio, and would be extraordinarily useful. This, you know, if someone wants to build this thing, go ahead, let me know. I want it.
It's interesting. Just the fact that you said internally, I know that at Microsoft there's internal tools like that as well, but I don't know if they are named and if they will ever release. It's that every team at every company seems to have built something, some kind of Rube Goldbergian miracle that creates exactly what they needed, but it never gets generalized and released into the wild.
And now that you've told everybody, we're going to have to take you out back and shoot you.
Exactly.
Sorry.
Well, of course, if you're interested in working on that stuff, you could come work with me and maybe we'll build it together.
Exactly. What about you, Roy?
I don't think it's possible to have such a generalized thing for companies, because each project is so different and it's so made out of string and gum just to make it work. So it just makes it impossible to make something as generic, because it would just take too much time and you'll always have edge cases. And a build process is just a series of edge cases, if you think about it.
Well, you know, interestingly, I would have agreed with you a few years ago, but I've seen some really neat innovation in the MS build space and just an obscene amount of MS build tasks to automate everything out of the sun.
So these are tasks. These are Lego tasks. Mm-hmm. And I use Final Builder to create, and I've created my own Rube Goldbergian machines, if you call it whatever. But, the thing is, the things we've created are created using these small blocks. So if you use a good build tool with good tasks, you can build anything, but you cannot build a full process that is generalized enough per project.
Brad, looks like you disagree.
No, I don't disagree, actually.
Oh, good.
I had something I wanted to add. So Microsoft, you know, has been in the virtualization space for a while, but there's an interesting product that most people don't really think about called SoftGrid, which is done by a team in Boston. And SoftGrid actually allows you to create a semi-private, semi-virtualized environment inside of an existing copy of Windows.
Ah.
And I can't help but wonder if there's some integration points here where you can say you don't have to go through the pain of bringing up an entire virtual machine. You can just give the code that you want to test its own little playground that's isolated from the rest of the software on the machine.
That's really interesting. At my last company, and I keep apologize for invoking my last company so often, but I've only been at Microsoft a number of months, and I was there for 7 years. But we needed to deploy large systems n number of times, where n was typically a very large number, and we ended up taking the running system, as it were, the binaries, the incomplete running system, and checking the entire tree into Subversion, and then telling all of our drone machines to simultaneously do a checkout, and they would bring down a complete running configured system and bring it down into the program files folder. But of course, there were those little edge cases like, oh, the registry that needed to be handled. If I had a virtual machine that wasn't quite so virtual, just a virtual space, such that my application had its own registry and its own GAC and all those kinds of things, the deployment would be easier. The build process would be easier. The idea of putting a rollback attribute on an integration test for an entire large system is a very attractive idea. That's a pretty cool idea. Someone must be thinking of it. Isn't that the way with good ideas? If you've come up with it, then it's someone is currently working on it somewhere in the world.
I think the whole idea of I think we've passed that. We're past the point where we need to worry about how we're going to undo stuff to the system, because the build tools that we have these days, like Final Builder, Visual Build Pro, and so on, they're mature enough and they have enough tasks. We can pretty much do anything and automate it. It would take a considerable amount of time, to do it on the first run. For example, I had a solution with 120 projects. I was consolidating database changes, merging stuff automatically, pushing stuff out, doing testing and all that stuff. It took a month to build that build process on an existing project. But once we had that, everything else was trivial. So this is just bureaucracy as far as I consider it.
Did that include the undo? I mean, the thing about virtualization.
It was on a virtual machine, so what do I care?
Well, but see, I felt a little bit there like you were trivializing virtualization, but then you said that the entire process was running on a virtual machine.
You have a task in FoundBuilder to create a virtual machine, run it, automate it, install stuff on it, right? So it's there. It's mature enough, so you don't have to worry about it. If the tool is there, like replacing stuff in XML files, done. You know, it's not that big a deal. I don't think that's our problem. These are the problems we need to worry about these days. Not the build process. It's the testing tools.
Well, so infrastructure is great. It allows you to do all sorts of things once it's built. It takes a whole lot of effort to get there. So anything we can do to lessen the amount of effort required for people to implement more advanced infrastructure, such as generating virtual machine images as part of your continuous integration process, is great, and it will benefit way more people than if we just say, well, you know, here are the 20 tools that you can slap together using scripting glue and some, you know, simple, well, sort of maybe not so simple explanations as to how to do it.
Right. If MacGyver were doing the process, how would that look?
Well, it would have to involve a piece of chewing gum and a car battery.
Exactly. But sometimes it feels like we're MacGyver as we try to get these things working. You're saying, Roy, that the tools are the issue, but I'm always lashing together 20 different tools from 20 different places.
You don't have to, Scott. That's what I'm saying. We are at the state where most developers, the only thing that's stopping people today from doing a real and a maintainable build process is knowing the tools that exist out there.
So what is this holy grail tool that I'm completely missing the point on that you keep speaking of? I don't think Final Builder is the answer to the world's build problems.
To me, the answer is TeamCity plus Final Builder.
Okay. So that's an interesting point of view. So you like TeamCity and Final Builder. Do you guys want to weigh in on what your...
I mean, it's my answer.
Because you're speaking very declaratively, Roy, that the problem is solved.
For me, the problem is solved. And for a lot of other developers that I've seen, the problem is solved. But they just don't realize that because they keep doing their NAND task and their MS build task and their XML configurations when they can do it visually and in a maintainable manner. So I don't get it. I seriously don't get it.
Okay. Jeff?
Personally, I really like my MS build tasks and how they've all been slapped together. And actually, we've managed to do so quite maintainably. You'll see this in the MUnit v3 source tree if you ever check it out. But I believe that you won't find a single holy grail tool. You will still find domain-specific tools to solve various problems. So, you know, maybe you'll find that using something like Final Builder will make it easier for you to set up your continuous integration build process. Or perhaps you already have build scripts that you use on the command line, and then cruisecontrol.net actually isn't so bad if you already have the scripts. But for actually running the tests and distributing them, I want that to be Galio, maybe.
So let's try to bring this around to we talked about build, which it was a little indirect. We talked about testing. I want my build test to be kind of the same thing. And then what's beyond unit testing? We had spoken briefly before about the idea that do I want to write integration tests with my unit test tools, or is there some other yet-to-be-written tool? Do you guys advocate using your tools for the creation of integration tests?
I have shocked many clients by telling them not to use NUnit for their integration and high-level tests. You know, it's not what it was built for. Your NUnit tests are basically running in a little sandbox that makes its environment somewhat different from what's going to happen when you're running the full application. And when you're really doing your final integration tests, your system tests, you need to be doing that in an environment that's suitable for it. You also want, I believe, since I practice various agile approaches, I believe that you want your overall tests to be in a form that is digestible by a user, by a customer. And I don't think that C-sharp code, even though it's a lot easier to read than C++ or COBOL, is really what the user or the customer wants to see. So I like to use frameworks like Fit or Exactor or the frameworks that reduce it all to simple statements of what you're going to do.
Interesting. Well, that's true. I actually used Selenium and Water and Watton at my last job to do my testing. I, of course, ran them with NUnit, but ultimately they were doing the work and they were working against live machines. Let's each have one last comment from each of you as we finish up our panel here.
I also think that acceptance style testing tools like Fitness are a direction. They're not there yet. Some of them are horribly buggy. But we need to look at the future of these tools. For example, Storyteller from Jeremy Miller. You can look at that as the beginning of the future of what we would like these tools to look like. Look at Galio as maybe at the basis on which future tools, maybe in a year or two, will be built on or based on in thought. That's it for me.
So I'd actually like to ask your readers to help us define what these tools should be. In many cases, I know a lot of people have built things internally to solve their problems, and it would be great to get some insight into what those things have been and to share those ideas more widely and publish them and hopefully get in touch with us and, you know, contribute that experience, that knowledge and those needs.
I think that's an excellent call to action, Jeff. Do you have anything you want to add, Brad?
Plus three. I think all their points are valid and reasonable. The tools are immature. The existing TDD tools are not appropriate. And we're going to find out what people are using. I think that's going to drive the innovation. I don't think I'm personally a TDD tester. I don't really think I'm qualified to say what these things are. I mean, I got to ask somebody else who's doing this job, and it's not me.
Yeah. Well, I definitely think this is a very exciting time. If you're not involved in test development, that this is the time to jump in. And any final words, Charlie?
Well, NUnit is continuing. It's adding more features. It's building its new very large scope platform, which could pretty much be the same promises that Jeff has been making. Mm-hmm. That to be able to run anything and everything. But I think the really important thing is that we continue to have this diversity in this space, because I think that's where the innovation and the ideas come from. And while we want everything to be interchangeably usable, I don't think we want to create one big thing that everyone will thereafter use, even though that's, one thinks of that sometimes as the definition of success in the marketplace.
Definitely. I think it's a really exciting time to be involved in testing right now, and I really want to thank you guys, Charlie Poole, Roy Osherov, Jeff Brown, and Brad Wilson. This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and we'll see you again next week.